It's very good to see everybody here today. If we have any visitors with us for the first time, then I encourage you to fill out a visitor's card while you're here. At the end of our service today, a basket will be passed around where you'll be able to place that visitor's card. All we want is to get to know you a little bit better, especially if you have any spiritual needs, if you'd like to sit down and have a Bible study about any of the things that we've studied so far today, or any questions about God, about the faith that we proclaim, or about the Bible, then we would love to sit down, open up our Bibles together with you, and study what God has to say to us. Now, the Bible says the fool has said in his heart that there is no God. But I suppose the one who does not believe in God, the atheist, believes we are the fools when we say that there is a God. So somewhere in the middle of that, the agnostic stands confident that we cannot know the answer. Perhaps there's a God, but perhaps there isn't a God. And in the end, it's not so much whether there is or is not a God, but should I even care about answering the question? So today what I would like to talk about is, does it matter if God exists? Now the reason why I bring it up is for three reasons. First of all, we live in an age where many of the things that once we depended on God to do, we can do for ourselves, such as health or well-being. It used to be that faith would get you through difficult times, physically speaking. In the age of the Bible, for example, somebody might lean on Jesus to perform a miracle for him. He might go to one of the apostles in the book of Acts and ask that something be done for him. We read in our Bible classes time and time again of those who could not walk, who could suddenly walk again. Of those who could not see, who could then see when the power of God touched them. Of people who suffered from all kinds of maladies, things that were obvious and visible and things that were invisible or on the inside. And God could take care of them. And a lot of the issues that we read about in the Bible, the physical issues, illnesses, well, we can now take care of those things ourselves. Medical technology has reached such a point that we're very, very close to being able to help regenerate organs that don't work anymore. Helping people to walk with prosthetics. To do DNA research into why it is that certain people get sick with certain diseases. And to isolate the DNA and to repair it in such a way that they either do not ever get sick or they're able to overcome the illness in their lives. But people also used to depend on faith for friendship, for family and fellowship, to give their life ultimate meaning and purpose. And now I suppose religion has become obsolete in that sense as well. We have more leisure time available to us than any other generation in human history. And with all that leisure time, we're able to build meaningful friendships and relationships with other people who share our interests. We're able to travel the world to pick up hobbies. And in every other age in human history, people couldn't just pick up a hobby. People couldn't just go travel the world. They couldn't just meet somebody at a coffee shop. No, they were too busy preparing their homestead for winter, gathering the harvest so their families wouldn't starve, or fighting off raiders and bandits. But we also used to use our faith to understand the mysteries of the world. When we didn't understand why gravity works the way that it does, why things are born and live and die the way that they do, the way of every organism on planet Earth, how the stars and the other heavenly bodies move through the sky the way that they do, where does heat come from, and cold, and weather, hurricanes and tornadoes? And we used to attribute those things to God when we didn't understand meteorology, when we did not understand the movement of plates and tectonic activity underneath our feet, when we did not understand how to harness the things of nature and advance technology beyond what we once could only dream of. So in a world where the sick are healed and people can find friendship, fellowship, and meaning in many other places, and where science and technology have answered many of the mysteries that once plagued us, Has God and religion just become obsolete? In a world like that, why should I even care if God exists, if we can even come to such a conclusion at all? So people will offer various alternatives to faith in God. People will say, can't I just be a good person? Can't I just live by the golden rule, love my family and take care of my neighbor, be community-minded, love the homeless? Can't I just live by the golden rule and allow that to fill my life with meaning and purpose and substance? Well, I just choose not to believe either way, because what has certainty really done for anybody lately? Certainty just causes people to get into arguments. Certainty has just been the cause of war throughout human history. Certainty was what caused the Crusades. It's because of such dogmatic certainty that we'll never have peace in the Middle East, because two opposing sides will always and forever believe that they are absolutely, positively right. What has certainty really done for any of us lately? And along those same lines, certainty just leads to conflict. So isn't it better just to ignore the question of God's existence? Isn't it better if we all just get along as the human race and not allow piddly things like belief and faith and superstition to divide us when we have such big problems that we need to overcome? Why can't I just be satisfied with things like marriage or family or career and good works in the community and just accept that I might live to be 70, 80, maybe 90 years old, and I just get to be one little speck in human history, and I'm okay with that? But I suppose if you were not so optimistic, and yet you still realized you were nothing but a little speck in human history, you might come to the conclusion of the nihilist, which simply means life means nothing. So whether God exists or not, my life is just pointless. Well, let's talk a little bit about whether or not God is actually obsolete anymore, okay? Let's hit this idea of, does God even belong in the 21st century anymore? Because sometimes I think we have this idea that if Jesus had come today instead of in the first century, he would still look exactly the same way that he did in the first century. He'd wear a linen robe and he'd have a long beard and basically look like a crazy homeless guy. And if you handed him a cell phone, he'd be like, well, why are the buttons so small? And I don't understand. How do you hook up to the Wi-Fi? Would God be confused by your cell phone if you handed it to him? Does God understand how to program a smart TV? Because I don't know. I went to college and I don't know how to program a smart TV. There's things that my TV can do that people keep telling me. My brother-in-law, Brian, who's an engineer for Verizon, your TV, you can do that with your TV. I don't care. If it requires more than two or three buttons to push, I don't care what my TV can do. Now, would God be confused by our modern world? Would he be overwhelmed by the number of channels available on satellite TV? Would he look at your cell phone and go, well, I don't know, I'm still using my flip phone and I'm fine with it? We believe that God doesn't have a place in our advanced modern society because God is some kind of a goofy-looking relic from thousands of years ago. And that's very easy to do. It's very easy to keep God in kind of this small historical, cultural context, this tiny box, as if he is nothing but just a relic from the past. But we forget a few things. First of all, that God is timeless and God is eternal. Jesus describes himself in Revelation chapter 1 as the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. Which means that whether he was at Alpha at the beginning or Omega at the end, as we might say, from A to Z in human history, there's nothing that's ever happened in human history that has caught Jesus off guard. There is nothing that we have done as far as advancing technology or society or philosophy that God looks down and goes, huh, I didn't know you could use cannabis like that. Huh, who'd have thunk? Plastic! From all those chemicals. Way to go, humanity. No, he's the Alpha and the Omega. From the day the world was made to the day that he will destroy it by his own power, he's been there and always will be there, witnessing human history, witnessing everything that we've done, from the grand all the way to what you are doing every single day of your life, the cereal that you pour into your bowl in the morning. He's there for all of it. The basis for all of our advancements, the basis for all of our scientific discoveries, after all, are the laws that God laid down from the beginning. The entire reason that we're able to make plastic, to manipulate chemicals in such a way as to make a product like plastic, the very reason that we're able to make a plane take off from the ground in spite of the fact that it should go against all wisdom and logic, 200 people in a metal tube at 30,000 feet is just unnatural, my friends. But the reason why we can do it is because of the natural laws that God laid down. It is because God created an orderly and predictable universe that will always act in a way that is predictable. Gravity will always be gravity. Sound waves will always move in a certain way depending on the conditions because there are rules that govern those waves. And chemicals will always react in a certain way with each other and to each other because it is predictable and it is how it will always be. So for me, and I believe for every person of faith, every new piece of technology, every new discovery in the stars, everything that we've done to advance beyond what we once were, making stone tools, all we're doing is taking the rules that God laid down with the materials that have always existed since Genesis chapter 1 and doing things that God would have predicted along the way anyway. We need to keep that in mind. That we're only discovering things that God knew all along. Go to Isaiah chapter 45. And let's notice a couple verses here. In Isaiah chapter 45, God's speaking through the prophet, and he has this to say in verses 9 and 10. Woe to the one who quarrels with his maker, an earthenware vessel among the vessels of earth. Will the clay say to the potter, what are you doing? Or the thing that you are making say, he has no hands? Woe to him who says to a father, what are you begetting? Or to a woman, to what are you giving birth? We look at God as if he does not have the right to tell us what to do in spite of the fact that he has created every condition of the environment that we're living in. In spite of the fact that we are breathing his air and manipulating his materials, we would look up at God and say, what gives you the right? But go to the book of Ecclesiastes. And in particular, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Now we know the book of Ecclesiastes was written by a man who had incredible wealth and incredible wisdom. But he looked around at the world that surrounded him, and it was an opulent and beautiful world, of course. And he wondered, is there any happiness apart from God? Can I just remove God from the equation? Can I take him out of the equation and stop caring if God exists or not? Now, this is what he had to say in verses 9 through 11 of Ecclesiastes 1. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see this? This is new. Already it has existed for ages which were before us. Verse 11. There's no remembrance of earlier things and also the later things which will occur among those things which will come later still. Now what he means by that is you can look around at everything that you see and already it's existed for ages. Well, what about cell phones? Cell phones are new, aren't they? Communication over mass distance. That's all it is. You've just taken an old idea and repackaged it. The only difference between cell phones and smoke signals is they're just a repackaged idea. Same thing, communication over mass distances. Airplanes. Airplanes are new. See this? This is new. But the reason why an airplane flies, that's always existed. And we looked at birds when we wanted to invent airplanes because birds have always worked a certain way and we take the same ideas. Cars! Aha! Solomon didn't own a garage full of cars, did he? Yeah, but the idea of locomotion. The only difference between a car and a horse-drawn carriage is that you replace the horse with horsepower in the form of an engine. The idea of locomotion, though, that's not a new idea. That's always existed. God looks at our discoveries as a rather quaint thing. When we invented the cell phone, God said, good for you guys. Good job. Nice. Good. When the first plane took off, good job, guys. Birds have been doing that for thousands of years. Geothermal energy. That's a pretty advanced thing. Geothermal energy. Oh, great. You guys just finally discovered that there's a bunch of heat coming out of the earth. Wow. Nice. Good. Wonderful. Good job, guys. And if Jesus were to come today instead of the first century, if he had come now instead of during the Roman Empire, he's not going to be shocked by cell phones and smart TVs and airplanes. He's not going to be shocked by any of that. Already it has existed for ages before it. And the world is constantly changing, whether it's culture or fads or technology or standards of living. Mike Abney liked my tie this morning. John Banks never likes my knit ties, but Mike Abney liked my knit tie this morning. He said, I had one just like it back in the 70s. And I said, do you still have it somewhere in your closet? These things, they cycle back through. And the moment that you pare down your tie collection is the moment those old ties suddenly come back in style. Ties are one thing, though, but there's every other idea is the exact same way. What happens with humanity is because things are so fast-paced and they cycle through and clothes change and fads change and language changes, we start to feel this sense of abandon, of feeling lost in a world that's constantly moving around us. And I think that fosters this sense of abandon where we kind of go through shape-shifting periods throughout life. Think about, what did you look like when you were in high school? Actually, let's get even more specific. What did you look like from freshman to sophomore to junior to senior? I almost, by the way, I almost put up some of those pictures from the 90s of me, all right, in the really, really wide-gauge corduroy pants and the JNCO jeans, right? Please tell me I'm not the only person who wore JNCO jeans back in 1995, okay? And I make a joke, okay? I joke about this. But you can look at people's lives, and they're not being silly when they shape-shift from one thing to another. They're trying to find purpose. They're trying to find meaning. And people will change everything about them, from the way that they talk and the kind of people that they're around, to even what they believe is right and wrong, or what their priorities are, just because they're trying to find purpose. They're just trying to find a place to fit in. I think God is more relevant than ever. Yeah, this is a very fast-paced society, and there's things that we do every day that people 2,000 years ago or even 20 years ago could only have dreamed of. But doesn't that actually make God more relevant now? More relevant than ever? My friends, think about some of the things that we have at our disposal. Nuclear weapons. Don't we need God more now that we have the capability to basically obliterate the planet with this push of a button? Don't you need more of a moral standard, of a better sense of right and wrong, some guiding light to help you deal with technology of that magnitude? Don't we need God more with things like cloning and genetic engineering? Yes, these things are incredible and they're advanced. But what is cloning and genetic engineering without a moral compass behind it? My friends, without morality, without God's standard of truth, genetic engineering is just eugenics. Without right and wrong, it's just eugenics. What about mass information and spying? We have no idea how much Google knows about us, and I'm not saying that as a joke at all. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but yes, I do cover up the camera on the front of my computer. Because you never know who's watching. But we have absolutely no idea just how many millions and billions of bits of information Google knows about us. And don't you want to live in a world where there is a standard of truth, of right and wrong, that goes beyond just what's convenient or expedient or profitable for Google or a government? My friends, all of this technology makes God more relevant than ever. Because these are tough questions they didn't have to ask 2,000 years ago. Well, let's move on to another point here. More than just a face in the crowd. Being just one of billions of people sometimes leaves us with this undeniable sense of futility, as if I am a nobody, as if I am pointless, as if I am forgotten. And even the truly great ones eventually are forgotten. In the book of Ecclesiastes, for example, notice chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. He says, "What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun?" Great men and small men alike, what advantage does any man have in all the work that he does under the sun? Because a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth still remains forever. Now, he's not saying that as a compliment to the earth. He's saying that this is a laborious process, isn't it? A generation goes and a generation comes, and the only thing that's left behind are the rocks under our feet. So how important do you think you are if you believe that you're going to outlast the gravel under your feet? You are not any more long-lasting than that. And even the truly great people eventually become nothing but monuments. Well, I'd like to be a monument. No, you don't want to be a monument someday. It's a statue. It's lifeless. It's void. It is what it is. They become tourist attractions, not living, breathing people. Even the great ones fall. Even the great ones are forgotten. You might have a hospital wing named after you because you made some great donation. But just ask Tony. Eventually, hospital wings get torn down and replaced with something bigger and better. And it's a nice hospital wing, too. But even hospital wings get torn down. There is nothing or permanent or eternal about any relationship, about any accomplishment, about anything that you do, even if you take some small consolation from propagating the human race. Guess what? If there is no God, there's nothing stopping the human race from eventually being wiped off the face of the earth by plague or extinction or self-destruction of some kind. So the agnostic or the atheist can't even pat himself on the back for propagating the species. That in itself is a vain adventure if there is no God. It takes a being with unlimited moral and mental capacity to know us the way that God does, to know us intimately enough, to know every person, and only God can satisfy that requirement. Matthew chapter 10, my friends. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 29. "Are not two sparrows sold for a cent, and yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father? But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Therefore do not fear, because you are of more value than many, many sparrows." Now if God knows the number of hairs on your head, what else does He know? He knows a lot more than Google. And He knows a lot more about us than our government knows. He even knows more about us than our parents. He knows more about us than we know about ourselves. We don't even remember the day that we were born, or the first 2 years of our lives for that matter. God was there. We don't remember what it was like in the womb. And God says, I formed you in the womb. I crafted you in the womb. He knows more about us than we know about ourselves. I take some consolation. Great consolation. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 12, a verse that we're very familiar with, I'm sure, but I love the way that he puts it here. As far as the knowledge of God goes, he says in Hebrews 4 verse 12, for the word of God, I think he's talking about Jesus there, by the way, not the Bible. The word, John 1 verse 1, the word became flesh and dwelt among us. I think the word of God, that God himself, that Jesus the Son, is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword and piercing as far as the division of soul and spirit, of both joints and marrow, and able to judge the thoughts and intentions of the heart. So you're more than just a face in the crowd. You are you. And God knows you. And you actually matter. You actually mean something. That's why the question of God's existence is so important, because you actually matter if God exists. Don't you want to know the answer then? Isn't it worth your time or your energy to ask the question, does God exist? The reward is so great, isn't it, if he does? Not if he does, by the way. The reward is great because he exists. I know there's a number of passages up here on the screen, but we have time to just look at a couple things here. Go to Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 38, first of all. And in the great list of these faithful individuals, he gets down to those, beginning in verse 32, who conquered kingdoms and performed acts of righteousness and obtained promises and shut the mouths of lions. They quenched and escaped things. But it also says that they endured pain and suffering on top of all of their victories and their accomplishments. He says that they were scourged and mocked and chained and imprisoned. They were stoned and sawn in two, tempted and put to death with the sword. They were destitute, afflicted, and ill-treated. And he says in verse 38 of these completely worthless individuals by every worldly standard, death row inmates, worthless people, rejects from society, alienated people with pointless existences based on every worldly measure, who died without any nobility, men of whom the world was not worthy, men of whom the world was not worthy. John the Baptist had his head chopped off after a life eating locusts and honey and living in the wilderness, men of whom the world was not worthy. Ruth, a nobody Moabitess, a widow who comes back home or comes back to Bethlehem with nothing, a woman of whom the world was not worthy. Jesus, man of whom the world was not worthy. Paul and Peter and the other apostles. Elijah, Jeremiah, the man of lamentations. Men of whom the world was not worthy. They actually mattered to God, though. It actually mattered to God. Is there any ultimate purpose then? Because many things in life do feel out of our hands. Many things in life feel out of your control, as if somebody else has the steering wheel. Who has the steering wheel in your life? Sometimes we feel like politicians have the steering wheel. Like they're the ones controlling this ride. And we just have to accept wherever they decide to take us. Sometimes we feel like pop culture icons have the steering wheel and they determine the things that we're supposed to wear that make us feel beautiful, or what the standard of beauty is. Maybe you feel like criminals have control of the steering wheel because of the things that they can do to you, the pain that they can inflict upon you and your family, stealing things from you, harming you physically, killing you. Sometimes we feel like somebody else always has control of our lives. And you know what? If God doesn't exist, and if you don't even care about asking the question, don't complain when you feel like your life is running out of control. Don't complain if you feel like you're in a car with a dozen squabbling, arguing people all trying to grab the steering wheel as it is careening wildly down a hill toward destruction. Don't complain about that. Because if you don't want to know if God exists, if you don't care if God exists, and if God doesn't exist, then it is what it is. And you are at the mercy of somebody else. My last point is this. Whether we like it or not, whether we accept it or not, all of life is hurtling toward its eventual destiny. And that destiny is destruction. Now, if God doesn't exist, which that's a big if, I don't even take it into account. But if God doesn't exist, you will die someday. All of humanity will be extinct someday. The sun will burn out and life will not be able to exist on planet Earth any longer. Okay? But since God does exist, not if he exists, but since he does exist, guess what? Someday you'll die. All of humanity will be extinct when it is destroyed in judgment, and the earth and its works will be utterly and totally annihilated from existence. So, either way, we are all uncontrollably hurtling toward destruction. We're like a bunch of people on a raft on a river. Nobody's in control of it in spite of what we might think. We're all at the mercy of the current, aren't we? Now, we can't control what the other people on the raft do. We can't control what they do to us and to each other. We can't control war. We can't control criminals. We cannot control what the other people on the raft do to each other and to us. But we do have a choice about what we'll do. And somewhere on down the line, somewhere at the end of that river, there's a waterfall, and we're all just waiting around on this raft for that waterfall to destroy us. And out comes a lifeline. A lifeline that reaches out and says, "You don't have to stay on the raft, you know. I offer you an out, a destination, a place of safety. Don't you care if God exists or not? Aren't you willing to explore the question instead of dismissing it? Because since God exists, we don't have to stay on the raft and wait for the destruction that awaits all of us. God offers a lifeline to those on the raft who don't want to perish. As he says in 2 Peter chapter 3, turn with me to 2 Peter chapter 3, beginning in verse 9. "The Lord is not slow about his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient toward you, not wishing for any to perish, but for all to come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Since all these things are to be destroyed in this way, what sort of people ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Looking for," right? That's investigation, isn't it? A willingness to study, a willingness to think through it. "Looking for," thoughtfully processing it. "Looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, on account of which the heavens will be destroyed by burning and the elements will melt with intense heat. But according to his promise, we are looking for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells." Now, if you're not a Christian, you really ought to be. Make the choice today to grab the lifeline that is being offered to you. And you don't have to mill about on a raft with everybody else just waiting for destruction, waiting for your inevitable destiny. Take the destiny that God offers you. Become a Christian this day. Whatever need you might have, please come forward as we stand and sing.